A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Spread.
Fred Anderson, welcome back to Somewhere in the Skies.
Thank you. Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be back. You know, even if it was a recording the last time, if I remember it correctly. So I wasn't really there live, you know, or here live. And I'm, like I mentioned to you before we started here, I am a little bit starstruck to be on Somewhere in the Skies. I must admit that, you know, so now I've been writing to my friends and my partner, and you know, I hope I doesn't sound silly now. You know, I'm you know, this Swedish accent, Swedish chef. I don't know.
No. First of all, that's extremely flattering. I'm honored to have you on, and there's a reason we're having you on, and that's because we're going to talk all about Swedish UFOs and the Swedish men in black. And I couldn't think of a better person to come on to talk about that. So no, it's a true honor to have you here. And yes, we should mention you were featured in episode 259 of Somewhere in the Skies, where I covered Nordic UFOs and a few cases out of Sweden. And you had written a brilliant article, and I reached out to you and I said, is it okay if I feature this in the episode? And then it dawned on me, I'm like, what would be even better? Let's just have Fred tell the story. And you were so gracious and kind to let me do that. And hey, people loved that episode, as I know they're going to love this one. So yeah, let's kind of dive into the subject we're going to be discussing. And that is the Swedish Men in Black. Now, when people think of the Men in Black, they often think of the movies with Will Smith and these very old cases in the United States. But this phenomenon has happened worldwide. We've heard of cases all over the world. And you were able to dig up several Swedish Men in Black cases as well, which I was never keen to. And I know a lot of our audience may never have known these either. So we're going to be talking about that tonight. But before we even do that, I have to ask the origin story of Fred Anderson. How did you first get involved with UFOs? What sparked your interest?
Well, it's very, very easy to show. This book here, De otroliga tefaten, this is the book by Eugen Semichov. He was a Russian Swedish journalist, you know, in popular science. You know, he wrote about space, about science in general, and he also had a keen interest in UFOs and aliens. But he was also a skeptic. He was really, really skeptic. So this book specifically is. I mean, it's clearly he really doesn't believe what he's writing about, but you can also sense that he has such a passion for it. He's so curious about these cases. And there's, you know, Swedish cases. There is maybe foremost American cases. This is the first time I heard about the Socorro incident with Lonnie Zamora. And still one of my favorite cases out there, actually. So this one, I think my mother found it for me at some secondhand store. And, you know, I was stuck directly into the subject. So, I mean, I blame everything on this book, you know.
I love that. I blame everything on my UFO sighting and a book as well. by Stanton Friedman, which was Crash at Corona, about the Roswell UFO crash. So I know well, my friend, how much these books can kind of take a hold of you, whether imaginary or real. And that kind of plays into what we're going to be talking about tonight in terms of the Men in Black. Are they real? Have people actually encountered these people, or are they even people? I know we're going to discuss later some of the theories on what the Men in Black might be. But before we even do that, okay, so you have this interest in UFOs. You write over, you write your articles over at Medium, and that's where I found this one. And it really caught my attention. So I got to ask, what inspired you to look into the Men in Black?
Well, I have a tendency to, when I get a fixed idea and I can't stop thinking about it, I don't know if I'm somewhere in the spectrum, but I can't stop looking into something when I start thinking about it. And when it was the case with the Men in Black in Sweden, is because I couldn't find any at all. It was there was like no information. We have a lot of very, very interesting flying saucer cases in Sweden. We have humanoids. We have other kinds of being. We have a lot of ghosts. We have a lot of these things. But there was almost nothing written about Men in Black. And when I looked in old UFO magazines and newsletters and books from Sweden, they were often just mentioned briefly. So I actually contacted Håkan Blomqvist, who's a brilliant Swedish researcher, mostly about UFOs in relation to the esoteric. So he's an expert on contactees and similar characters out there. And I asked him, have you ever heard about Men in Black in Sweden? And he sent me a link to a little text he wrote once. And that, that made me realize, okay, there is stuff out there. So I continued to go through that source and I found couple more, not many, but there is a couple of cases that I actually find quite interesting. So, thanks to having access to the Archives for the Unexplained and their amazing scanned collection of newsletters and searchable newsletters and magazines, I was able to dig up a few more cases, which I wrote about in the article. The main thing was that I couldn't find anything. And if I can't find anything, then I must find it.
So I find it really interesting kind of how you were able to dig up some of these cases of Men in Black, Fred. But I know you kind of have a personal story, too, of a possible, and we use that term loosely, possible brush with a Men in Black. Would you mind telling us the story of Loam and how that kind of ties into all of this?
Yeah, it was around the first time when I started to think about Swedish Men in Black encounters, and I had just begun. This was a while ago, maybe 2 years ago or something. And I started to do some light research, see if I could find anything. And I was, it was going through my mind all the time. And I remember I ran down to the store and to do some shopping. And on my way home, a man passed me. I didn't see his face, but a man passed me. And I could sense that he was stopping behind me. I could literally sense his eyes in my neck. And I turn around and I notice that this guy who was dressed in a dark jacket and a dark hood was standing still there at the street, just looking at me. And I felt, okay, it was during daytime. I'm not worried in that way that it could be dangerous or something. So I just, okay, he thought I looked like
I thought I looked like someone, or maybe he's a drug dealer. You know, I've been asked several times here to ask to buy substances. So anyway, I ignored him and I walked up to the park in front of our house. And once again, I had this feeling that, you know, he's behind me. And I look back and yes, he's coming behind me, you know, maybe 20, 30 meters. And now I start to get a bit worried, actually. So I walk to the house and I turn around. And then I just see him standing on a very specific spot on this path through this little forest in the park. And he's standing there looking at me. It's like from I Know What You Did Last Summer, basically, you know, mm-hmm. with the hoodie. And okay, so I hurry in. I lock the door. Everything is fine. I don't think about this for a day, maybe. So, I mean, the next day I'm sitting working in the living room and I see that the cats are, they're focusing on something in the hallway. And I go out and look and I see the door handle moving like someone is trying to get inside.
God.
And I'm like, all right, right. So I look out the peephole and I see this man. I recognize him. I recognize the clothes. I see him standing outside the door. And I even snap a photo to be safe through the peephole, you know, to, you know.
Yeah.
And I open the door and I ask, so you're looking for someone? I must have been crazy, I guess. And he says, Luam, he pronounces Luam. And I said, no, there's no Luam here, and close the door. And he continues to be outside the door for a while, and then he leaves. And then for a month, this man showed up outside our door in the stairs. He tried to get inside our apartment in the middle of the night. He rang the doorbell, I remember once at midnight. One evening, I was kind of chilling. I looked out the balcony and I could see him standing outside the balcony looking up at our apartment. And I could see his white eyes, you know, glittering in the darkness. And I told my partner, you know, he's here again. He's here again. And every time we met him, he asked for Luam. And this continued for like a month, basically. And then he disappeared again. So it was a mysterious man who behaved very bizarrely. I felt directly that it was some kind of connection to Men in Black because I was so focused on it at the moment. And a while later, I was thinking about this word or name, Luam, what is it? And I decided to check it with Alan H. Greenfield's The Secret Cipher of the Ufonauts. You know, we're going to go the occult route here.
Absolutely.
And the word Luam, it brought only sinister words like shadows or lurking, stuff like that. And I started to research the word Luam. And Luam is a different spelling for Lam, I think, which is a kind of a soil. Lam is also the alien entity that Aleister Crowley a long time ago. So you see, you know this meme with this guy standing pulling strings between a note board, the conspiracy meme. That was me at the time. And I there was like this connection between Men in Black, Aleister Crowley, my fascination by Men in Black, of course. Everything kind of just came into one there. And then I realized that Men in Black basically has to do with paranoia because it automatically creates paranoia. When we listen to people who have met Men in Black, all of them are in a state of paranoia. They don't trust anyone. They don't trust, of course, the mysterious men. They don't, you know, they start connecting dots that might not even be there. And mm-hmm. I can understand why that frightens people so much. On a different note, this led to another bizarre synchronicity, because that was a couple of months later, and a friend sent me a photo from Norway, and it was these big tracks in the snow, footprints. And I was joking, oh, it's troll. It's troll footprints. And yeah, we laughed about that. A couple of hours later, I got an email from an English production company who asked if they can use a photo I took once of a troll. As a pareidolia effect, it's a troll. So, okay, weird, two troll things in one day. And in the evening, I'm out walking, and I'm coming to this exact spot out in the park where this man was standing. On that spot was a wooden troll, you know, a carved wooden troll, you know, this standing on the exact same spot. So that's like, of course, now I sound mad. I realize that. But it's, you know, when you start following the synchronicities around Men in Black, around the esoteric and UFOs, then you can disappear forever into the rabbit hole. And I still think about this guy. I still look for him. I still sometimes go and look through the people. Is he standing there today? Is he down in the basement? So yeah, it created some kind of paranoia that still holds on up until today, actually. So of course I had to dive into the subject of Swedish Men in Black even more, to kind of just make it come full circle, I guess.
Right. Wow. That is so fascinating. First of all, I didn't think we were going to connect trolls in the Men in Black, but I'm so happy that we've done that, Fred. That's awesome. But you bring up this idea of paranoia, and I think you're right. That is kind of the nature of the Men in Black phenomenon. Some figures lurking in the distance, either preceding or after a UFO event of some sort, or a event of high strangeness or the paranormal. They always seem to be around, at least in the lore that we've come to learn, both in the United States and possibly even in Sweden. So I'd love, if you wouldn't mind, could you maybe give us a few of the stories from the article that you found in terms of these Swedish Men in Black, if we do want to call them that?
Yeah, we have one that's actually connected to Loch Ness and the Loch Ness monster.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
It was in August, I think, 1971, and young journalist Jan-Ove Sundberg was sent to Loch Ness by the magazine he was working for, Lektyr, which was a men's magazine, to write about the monster. And when he was, lurking around there, he go into the forest, and suddenly he sees this UFO, a UFO shaped like an iron, basically. You know, they want to make your clothes flat. I don't know. You call it iron, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And he sees three individuals, three beings outside in what he thinks looks like diving suits, which is interesting because diving suits is something that comes back into his in the mythology he was creating, basically. So these beings, they fly away in their iron UFO. And he goes home, he writes the article about the Loch Ness monster, doesn't mention the aliens or UFO or anything like that. But not long after, he starts to have uninvited visitors to his house in Motala. They were knocking on his door, they were calling him, threatening him not to write and talk about this. He saw a big black figure in the garden lurking around, and this scared him so much that he basically refused to talk about the UFO/alien part of the Loch Ness story. One need to keep in mind that Jan-Ove Sundberg was, if I'm going to be kind, you couldn't trust him always. He had a tendency to make things up, to just make it spicier. he claimed to have taken photos of this UFO in Loch Ness, and he, in Flying Saucer Review, he actually shows a photo of one of the aliens, which shows nothing at all. There's just a forest. There's nothing there. It's fascinating, I think, because it was so connected to Loch Ness, which also brings forth another Men in Black episode in connection to that lake. The first interview, kinda, with Jan-Ove Sundberg was made by Ted Holliday in 1971 for Flying Saucer Review, or no, it was 73, and Ted Holliday is. One of many things he's famous for is that he did a thing with a priest, Reverend Ormond, I think his name was, who tried to exorcise the Loch Ness monster. Nice. The day after he did it, yeah, you know, it's a bizarre story. He even exorcised the Bermuda Triangle, I heard, but I haven't looked into it so much.
Okay.
But the day after the exorcism, Ted Holliday was out walking nearby the lake and saw suddenly a man in black staring at him from a distance, dressed in black leather clothes, and he heard a whistling sound, and then he disappeared. So it's an odd little connection to the Men in Black mythos, even from that direction. The guy who wrote the article about Jan-Ove Sundberg's experience at Loch Ness. Jan-Ove later wrote a book called Phantom Submarines, or Phantom Ubåtarna, which it's a Swedish book where he goes into, you know, we had a kind of USO flap in Sweden during the 80s, where people saw strange, mysterious submarines everywhere. And Jan-Ove thought these were, of course, alien crafts of some kind. So in this book, he had a whole chapter on frogmen in black, which is, I never heard about it before until I read this book. And he had like, I think it's like 25, 30 accounts of frogmen in black who threatens witnesses and behave weirdly, often in connection to strange, otherworldly submarines or whatever it is. Here the diving suits comes back again in his world, because the beings at Loch Ness had that. So Jan-Ove was a strange character, not totally pleasant, but he's someone you, in Swedish ufology, if a story is too good to be true, it's probably because you can find Jan-Ove somewhere in the background spicing it up a little bit, or a lot, or totally. The man was a mystery, absolutely. He was a madman. But good writer. He kind of reminds me of Gray Barker in the way that he was. He had an amazing way of telling stories, and you were never really sure how much he made up. Gray Barker, of course, is a totally different class of, but they had similar properties, both these men. You know, there were tricksters, hoaxers, showmen. In one way or another, at least. But you know, the frogman in black is, you know, he had so many that I think he actually have some real accounts, and maybe he saw what he thought they would be in them. You know, maybe it was, you know, in the stuff he wrote, all these frogmen, what you can see of them, they have often a darker complexion in the skin. They have, you know, a bit exotic look. You know, in Sweden, everything was, you know, everything that didn't look Swedish looked strange at the time. There was one man, he was out walking with his collie, and he encountered like six or seven of these frogmen coming walking towards him, and they kind of hypnotized him. So he was frozen, he was paralyzed while they were walking past him, which kind of reminds me of a couple of older gnome observations from Sweden, where the witness also kind of got paralyzed while they were marching by him. Another frogman, he wasn't dressed in a diving suit at the time, but he and his colleague was in an old-fashioned car, of course, stopped by the witness and asked for the direction to the harbor or something like that. And then he started asking questions like, what's your time cycle? You know, weird questions out of nowhere. Yeah. And of course, the witness later saw this guy and his colleague and a couple of other frogmen down by the water entering a submarine. These are weird stories. But the, like I said with Jan Ove, you never know what's the truth in them. What have he added and what have he totally made up? And what's the truth? You know, is there a truth? You know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you bring up so many little avenues we could go down with all of this. But when you said, you know, it kind of reminded you of something like Gray Barker or even Albert K. Bender, sort of these gentlemen in the United States who kind of birthed this mythology of the Men in Black. You know, there have been a lot of historians or let's say folklorists have traced it back to the dawn of time, basically, you know, if you want to take it down different routes of religion and the occult and men in black and dark figures. But it really did kind of start, I think, with the work of people like Albert K. Bender and Gray Barker and even the kind of sordid case of Maury Island in the United States. So I guess my question for you, Fred, is do you see any connections or patterns between what you were able to dig up in Sweden with these Men in Black cases and what was reported in the United States? The tricksterish nature is what stands out for me personally. Like you said, we hear that a lot in the cases in the United States. But yeah, were you able to find any patterns or connections between what's going on there in Sweden and possibly in the US? What's up, Somewhere in the Skies listeners? Ryan here. Just wanted to give a quick shout out to our brand new Patreon supporters. Special thanks to Matthew K., Josh R., Jen D., Jiminy C., Laura N. R., Monica F., Nathan P., Paul P., UFO Nut, Deborah B., Maureen N., Kevin P., Larry S., O'Teal B., Chris W., Orianda G., Russ, Dalen, Sergio B., Tad D., and Timothy S. I hope you enjoy your early access to episodes, bonus episodes and content, and priority to ask our guests your listener questions. I couldn't do the show without your support. So again, my sincere thanks to all of you, past, present, and future. If you'd like to help support Somewhere in the Skies today, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. Keep looking up and enjoy this week's episode.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, I think in those cases, I've found all of them basically have some kind of paranormal part. You know, in Jan-Ove's case, he had a poltergeist phenomena in his home after the Man in Black contacted him. Another guy, a very beloved man called Bevan Bertelsen, who was the chairman of UFO Sverige for 2 years during the 70s. He had his own experience in 1973, where a strange man showed up. This was after a UFO observation. He had his first one. And this man showed up at his face. This man showed up at his house, asked a couple of weird questions, walked out on this tiny road outside his country house and just disappeared. So you have these figures, these characters who just kind of like ghosts, you know, like shadow people. They just appear and disappear. I mean, I remember in the Albert K. Bender case that he experienced what you could describe as some kind of poltergeist phenomena, you know, knockings and bangings on the doors and walls and similar things, which is, of course, deeply connected to ghostly experiences also. And I mean, the look, at least in the look of the man, at least in the case of Jan-Ove and Bevan, is very traditionally Men in Black. They don't have any diving suits on in those cases, of course. I mean, absolutely. It's a mythology that have kind of, like you said, it has spread over the world. Our modern view on Men in Black, it's kind of not weird, but it's, you know, I like it when it goes really strange. I find it a bit boring when there's Men in Black who just look like, you know, some militaries, or they look like some boring government types. I want them to have black suits, old-fashioned suits, hats, old cars, similar things like that. What's missing today, I'd say, is the madness, the bizarreness of, for example, Albert K. Bender's experiences. I mean, he had these three men who came floating in his bedroom and they took him to Antarctica, and you had this strong smell of sulfur around them. And they were like more like, I think I compared it to a sleep paralysis experience or a DMT trip. And, you know, if I mean, I after rereading his book, Flying Saucers and the Three Men, I really think he experienced something. And if it had a natural explanation, I would say it was sleep paralysis in combination with paranoia. Maybe there was government types actually contacting him, because, I mean, it was a huge subject during the 60s. So I, you know, it's a mix of all these things, and they have, I think why they, sorry, I'm jumping here a bit. I think that they're not so common in Sweden because we don't have the same tradition of secrecy as you have in the United States. In Sweden, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but we're a very, very open country. You can get access to a lot of material. You can pick up the phone and talk directly to someone, still to a certain degree. And I think the secretness, the secrecy of the United States and the government style the United States have kind of feeds the Men in Black mythology even more. Yeah, here it's like, it's a different culture, you know, it's a very, very different culture we have and had. I mean, these things I told you about happened in the 70s, and it was a way more innocent time in Sweden than it is now. To have these things happen at the time, I would say, is very unique. And today, I'm surprised that we don't have more of these cases in modern times here in Sweden, though, because times have changed and we have a different kind of attitude. There is more paranoia. So I'm surprised that that hasn't, you know, created basically many blacks out there. But then again, with Sweden, it's a small country, you know. I don't know if that was a good answer. I feel I'm rambling on here.
No. It's a fantastic answer. You bring up a lot of good points, of especially the idea of secrecy. I mean, when, you know, within the United States, and even in, you know, I would say the UK as well, at times, when your governments are not being transparent with the people, that is when you start to create your own truths, create your own mythologies of what's occurring. And I think you're right. I think, you know, the reason you may not find a lot of cases like that in Sweden is because of that very reason. You have a government who's willing to tell the public what's going on, and there's a trust there. I feel like in the United States, there's no trust in government whatsoever. And we're seeing that play out right now, where our military are shooting down unidentified objects in the sky and not telling us what they are. So what happens? Either one extreme is that they're all surveillance equipment from a rival nation, or the other extreme, they're aliens from Zeta Reticuli, and this is Roswell all over again. So I think you're right. There's a gap between the knowing and not knowing that I think creates these stories of men in black, what they are, who they are, where they come from. And that's not to say they're not real and that this phenomenon is not real, but a lot of it probably could be attributed to what we want it to be, what we imagine it could be. And then tying it in to UFO sightings. You know, once you have a UFO sighting, a lot of people are like, oh my God, I've heard that the men in black come and silence you after you see these things. And that's when the paranoia starts. And everyone around you is a little more suspicious and might be a man in black or a woman in black even. So it's interesting. I think you bring up a lot of good points there.
I also believe that a UFO observation is by itself something so unique. Here in Sweden, I must admit, nowadays we don't have so many observations. You know, as you know, if you go back to the 60s and 70s and 80s, where you had tons of them, nowadays you don't have so much. But I can imagine. And I've never seen a UFO. You know, I've seen dots in the sky and everything, but, you know, it could be something else. I think just by seeing something like that, your mind goes on high alert to everything that looks and feels strange. Mm-hmm. You know, I can make a, this is quite wild comparison. I don't know if I should do it here, actually.
Do it.
it's now we're going into woo here. You know, okay. This is woo. There was some years ago I did a lot of mushroom psychedelics. And there was like a year I had, you know, over one summer I did mushrooms three times. And during all those three times, I met the same man, and he's an odd-looking man. He's short, he's fat. He have his clothes doesn't fit. They're too big. And every time he looked at me, and yeah, you can say, okay, the guy's on mushrooms, or he hallucinated. But no, I wasn't hallucinating. But my senses, my mind was on high alert for everything around me. And I probably just noticed this guy each time. I mean, I live in a pretty small community. So, of course, with his odd looks, his strange behavior, he just stood out even more than he probably would in a way without mushrooms, I say. But that reminded me of how when you're into something unique, something odd, something out of the ordinary, how you tend to see stuff that not always is there. I have a weirder theory about that, is that the phenomena itself use this guy as a kind of proxy. So the phenomena showed itself to me as him. He was just an innocent bystander. He was just weird, standing there fishing outside in nature, looked like a gnome, basically. And he ended up being my connection to nature, to the phenomena, to the weirdness, to the high strangeness. And I think that's the case in a lot of encounters with the Men in Black, that you have seen something, you have experienced something, and you have no idea what it is. Everything is weird. Your reality is fucked up. And suddenly these two guys or three guys or one guy or women come and they talk to you and you feel that, this is out of the ordinary. This is something that usually doesn't happen. Even if, you know, maybe there's some innocent people asking questions, you know, everything turns weirder. I don't know if that made sense, but I can be a bit abstract sometimes.
No, I love that. This idea that it can bring in a sense of high strangeness, and everything starts to become bizarre. And this simple person now becomes like the center of a story they never wanted to be written into. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, like a symbol for high strangeness. And Men in Black is, for me at least, strong symbols for high strangeness. Because, you know, something weird happens, Men in Black shows up. You know, it's been like that constantly, obviously, through the years, you know. But, you know, it could be anything. I don't know. But I find it very fascinating. I find it so fascinating.
It is. Well, let's go there in terms of it could be anything, because you actually wrote another article where you theorized about what the Men in Black could possibly be. We touched on that right now a little bit, but what other theories do you think could be behind this? You know, I for so long, I thought these were just members of the government coming out to silence UFO witnesses. But then you hear the high strangeness aspect to a lot of these cases, and it doesn't seem like we're dealing with just, you know, a hired U.S. Air Force person or someone in the CIA or something, if we're going to keep it in the United States. It seems to be a lot weirder and, like you said, a lot more bizarre. So what are some of those theories, Fred, that you kind of pose in terms of what the Men in Black, the Swedish Men in Black even, could possibly be?
Well, it's like you said, it's just theories. I find Men in Black to be an interesting thought experiment. You know, just the presence of these characters, and that made me think. There is a theory that we're all aware of. I don't agree with it. That we're living in a simulation. You know, everything around us is created by a computer or aliens or whatever. Something have created us, and we're just running around there, poor suckers. And so maybe the Men in Black are kind of like a virus, like a virus sent in, programmed by whoever's behind all of this to check up on us. When there's a glitch in the matrix, like a UFO or Bigfoot or whatever, these viruses or these programs, you can say, comes, you know, sneaking around, asking questions. And they're not like us, because they're programmed to look like us, but they're not perfect. They're weirder. They're more unnatural somehow. So that's one hypothesis, I would say, but more than a theory. There's also this thing that maybe we're not visited by aliens at all. But what we're visited by is probes. I mean, we have something called the von Neumann probe, you know, probes sent to Earth to explore, check around. So maybe the Men in Black are kind of some kind of robotic or android versions of that probe. They send them in, you know, like a bird watcher or some, you know, they dress like a tree or bush or something and try to get closer to the birds or other animals. So maybe that's what the Men in Black is, you know. They kind of, they just made to look like us to sneak around. But we're, you know, they're not organic at all. I mean, there's many witnesses have described them as robotic in movement, you know, with plastic faces, you know, this, you know, obviously makeup on top of their features. I remember someone mentioned that it looked like he didn't have any lips, but the lips were painted by with lipstick. Yeah. You know, it's like, what is this? So that's one idea. if we're going to go even more woo-woo here, I feel, and I'm semi-serious about this, that you can say that the Men in Black are manifestations or thought creations by humanity's own paranoia. You know, you know, if you have the collective unhappiness paranoia, which I believe would create such a some kind of strong energy, you know, this negativity, this hopelessness, this paranoia, because the world it is what it is and has been like that for a number of years, and that alone. It's like a tulpa. I don't want to use the word tulpa. Someone wrote the other day that they're so tired of hearing about tulpas, but I'm saying it here. It could be a tulpa.
take it or leave it, guys.
Yeah,
tulpa.
Take it or leave it. Yeah. So they created by us, our collective angst, anxiety, you know. And this is like, I mean, I don't want to go political, but I also feel that some of these political characters we have are kind of the essence, the compressed unhappiness and paranoia and greed and everything of mankind itself. And that generates a certain form of characters, not necessarily in a woo-woo style, but they kind of just being naturally pushed in front. And suddenly we have a madman as a leader, you know, as a, you know, in the government or whatever you want to call it. So that's also a little take on it, at least. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm just speculating here, you know, I'm, of course. Yeah. But the Men in Black, they're like a, they are a rabbit hole, you know, it's difficult to not crawl into it, you know, and search and turn every stone and, you know, pull every root down there. There's always something that, you know, that sticks to you. Sometimes it's a bit gooey and gluey, you know, you can't get rid of it. maybe Men in Black are that goo that we people create unconsciously, I guess.
Oh, wow. You're blowing my mind, man. That's you're right. There's so many rabbit holes we could go down. The Men in Black are the goo. You need to coin that term, or what do they say? Trademark that term right now. Well, and I want to kind of wrap up our conversation on Men in Black, because I also want to just get your some of your favorite Swedish UFO cases. Mm-hmm. I'm dying to know. But before we end that, you mentioned we don't hear a lot about Men in Black anymore or encounters with them. And we did touch on why that might be. But have you been able to find any sort of modern day iterations of what could possibly be interpreted as a Men in Black encounter? Anything like that in like the last 10 years or so even. We always hear about them in decades prior.
You mean in Sweden or internationally?
I guess Sweden specifically.
Well, I have one, but that's the one we were talking about having on the Patreon.
Okay. All right. Guys, you heard it here first. Over on Patreon, after this conversation, we are going to continue with Fred over there to hear that story. So good tease. Good tease there, Fred. We'll save that one for Patreon then. Let's move on then to your favorite Swedish UFO cases. Now, some of them I'm familiar with, but not too many. So I'd like to get your thoughts and insights on some of the cases that really compel you in your homeland.
Well, we have, I would say, you know, I've written a lot about it. Some of this is not published yet, but it will be. And I found so many cases that I've fallen in love with and I can't stop looking into. Even if I'm done with the text, I'm continuing to dig into them because I want to find something new, something more interesting. And I think my absolute favorite one is in a small community of Trehörningsjö in 1969 in Trehörningsjö. It's a very, very small community, lots of forest and mountains around, a couple of lakes. It's very peaceful there. And they have a transmitter station where, signals, radio signals and television signals are distributed all over Sweden. And at that station, Kjell Näslund worked. And on this evening, I think it was March 12, 1969, he came to work around 6 in the evening. And, he made some coffee, he read the newspaper, he checked the equipment. And suddenly all the alarms went off, with lamps and sounds and, chaos. So he stood up and like, what's going on here? And then it stopped. So he called his colleagues and they didn't know anything about it. So, he leans back, continues with his newspaper. Everything is calm again. It's getting darker. Maybe half an hour later, he had this strong feeling that he needs to go and open the door and look outside the transmitter station. And when he do that, he sees a huge flying saucer. It's like 150 meters in diameter, standing,
Wow.
Yeah, it's enormous. It covers a whole, deforestation area below the transmitter station. And he's like, what the fuck? He's just looking at it because it's such a bizarre sight. He didn't expect that, Yeah, and the thing is, he sees movements also. It's like a tunnel going into the UFO. He kind of described it as some kind of almost three-dimensional, four-dimensional tunnel, not, purely material. And from that tunnel, beings came. And they were moving towards the transmitter station. And he received a message in his mind saying, let us in. So he opens the door. And he lets in maybe 10, 11, 12 beings shaped like boxes, like maybe 1 meter in height. And they're kind of fuzzy, foggy boxes. And they floats into the transmitter station. And they kind of checks out the equipment. And he's just standing there. He's like a couple of centimeters from them. And he senses that these boxes, or what you're going to call them, are more like a shield and that there's some kind of intelligence inside of them. Mm-hmm. This goes on for like 10 minutes or so. And then the beings leave, they float back into the UFO and they fly away. And he's left there alone. And the first thing he does is he calls the police. He have a friend who's a local policeman, and says, can you see something? So the policeman went out on his yard and looked in that direction. And he didn't see anything. He called his colleagues in a nearby town and, was there something going on here? And everyone like, no. And when he explained to them what had happened. They thought he was drunk. They laughed at him. His wife laughed at him. So he kept quiet about this for like 3 years or 2 years. 1971, he first told about this encounter. And for as long as he lived, he passed away some years ago, he told the exact same story. There was no, you know, you have these UFO stories where details are added and there's, you know, getting more and more, you know, spectacular. But in his case, it was like, no, this happened. I have no idea what it is, but this happened. And I would say what makes it convincing is that he made regular phone calls to his colleagues before the event, directly after the event, and to his friend, the policeman. And there was a constant communication in and around this incident, which makes me feel that this, he didn't fall asleep. He didn't imagine this. This is something else. In 1977, another man actually encountered three beings at almost the same spot. Some kind of short beings with spades. They were digging in the ground, and they had a quite small UFO behind them. And when investigators came there like a day or two after, they could actually find traces in the ground of someone digging and taking moss samples and things like that. So this area was kind of a hot spot for a number of years of weird sightings and strange beings. So the Trehörningsjö case is absolutely one of my favorites. It's so visual, especially when you read about it, not hearing a crazy old Swede talk about it. It's you can so easily imagine how it is out there in nowhere by this transmitter station, and this huge flying saucer lands, and there, you know, I love it.
Wow. Yeah. That's such. Have you been out to the site where this occurred?
No, I haven't. It's quite far away from where I live, but I'm planning to, definitely. I've been trying to pinpoint the exact spot where the flying saucer allegedly landed. So one day, maybe this summer, I will go up there and try to, you know, see if I can find some other witnesses or some relatives to Shell.
Yeah.
You know, because I want to do something with it. You know, I went down to there was a landing in 1946 in Ängelholm, and last summer I went down there and I filmed it and I explored this area, and that's so fun to do, you know, to actually go to the location and explore it. So yeah, with this case, one day, absolutely, I will be there and I will embarrass myself with knocking doors and talking to people.
That is a true investigator. Yes. You have to do that, my friend. And you let me know. I'm not too far from you nowadays. If you need someone to, hey, I'll carry your suitcase for you if you need. I don't care. I want to go there too.
I mean, it's easy for you to get to Ängelholm. Ängelholm is in the south of Sweden, where this UFO monument is, the landing in 1946. It's not that far away. If you go to Denmark and you take basically a bus and a train, you can reach it. I know it's easy to say, of course, but it's...
No, that's you said the right words, bus and train, because I cannot drive yet in Europe. I'm too scared. I'll get there, but wow, man, that's fascinating. I'm so happy. Thank you for sharing that story with us. Well, hey, we are going to head over to Patreon to hear about a modern day Men in Black case that you were able to uncover, which I'm really interested to hear about. So guys, if you want to hear that story, head over to Patreon to hear that. Fred's going to stick around and tell us that story and maybe one or two more of his other favorite UFO cases out of Sweden. But before we go here, Fred, on the main feed, can you tell us what else you're up to? Do you have any plans of more articles coming up or filming? I know you do a lot of filming as well. Let us know if there's anything you can tease for us.
Well, keep an eye on my Medium account. I have a couple of articles coming out. I might even talk a little bit about one of those cases on the Patreon version of this. Currently, I'm the story producer for Spökjakt, which is a huge paranormal show. They're in the UK right now, filming one episode. And I'm also waiting for the first test print of my new book, because what are podcasts for? Yes. Because I've written a book, yes, and I Amazing. Hope that I hope that book will be out in next month, in March. No, what is it? February, March. Yeah, it's called Northern Lights: High Strangeness in Sweden, where I only write about weird cases from the 20s up to the late 80s or early 90s. Often related to humanoids and flying saucers and time rifts and other kinds of wonderful things.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely have to have you back on to talk about the book when it comes out. That sounds really, really interesting. Well, where can we find all of your work and everything you're up to?
Well, outside my Medium account, where I publish all my articles, basically. I would say that best way to hang out with me is on Twitter, the infamous Twitter nowadays. I was almost on my way away from there, but I'm there. You know, I have a lot of friends. And yeah, and my name there is Homo Satanis. It's quite easy to find. And I also have an Instagram, Homo Satanis, where there's a lot of old UFO books and sometimes cases I write about and other weird stuff. So I would say that those are the best places to hang out with me. And I'm one of the good guys because I'm following back, if you're not assholes, of course.
Exactly. Guys, all the links to Fred's social media can be found in the show notes below. So be sure to follow him. And I really am looking forward to your book. But we're going to head over to Patreon right now to hear a story about the modern Men in Black encounter that Fred was able to dig up, and another case that you might see in his upcoming book as well. So, Fred, thank you so much for finally joining me as a proper guest on Somewhere in the Skies today.
Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.